championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Lil Baser. I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. You guys listen to the Horns Cash In, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. We hope you had a good Christmas break and or Hanukkah for me as Texas lands Mike Yurcich and gets ready for the Utah game. So we will break down both of those things for you in today's episode. But before we get right into it, how was your holidays, Darius?
Hey. Welcome back. I'm glad to be back. My holidays was great. That first week flew by. I'm officially broke. I'm going to be eating ramen noodles and drinking water until the next payday. But yeah, man, it's to see, you know, to get to spend time with family, to get to see the smile on my little boy's face, it's all worth it, man. So everything's been great. How was yours?
Man, I agree with you. Every time we get to this season of the year, my pockets run dry and my stomach adds about 3, 4, 5 inches. So not a great time of year, but also at the same time, pretty great time of year.
And the gyms, you know, the gyms are going to be packed, you know, with everybody doing their New Year's resolutions and stuff. So yeah, it's going to be tough, man. We'll figure it out.
We'll get it. It'll be all right. Hey, and everybody who's hitting the gym, you know, good for them, honestly.
Yeah, it'll last about a week.
That's very
and
true.
And they'll be back to normal.
It's also very true. But let's go ahead and get into some of the bigger news that dropped officially yesterday as Texas announced the hiring of Mike Yurcich, the quarterback coach and passing game coordinator for Ohio State. Now, who is Mike Yurcich for Longhorn fans who don't know him? Well, he was a former quarterback coach and offensive coordinator for Oklahoma State, where Mike Gundy found him when he took off at Shippensburg down in D2, when Gundy was just scrolling around online and he searched NCAA.com statistics page for the total offense category. He looked on D2 and he was like, hey, what's this Shippensburg University doing here? And, you know, what are they all about? Going 529.92 yards per game. That's when he brought Yurcich in for an interview and found him just like that. Very reminiscent of back when DKR brought in his offensive coordinator from the high school level, just looking for a guy who will bring something new. Now, he and Oklahoma State parted ways back in 2018 after he took Oklahoma State to some incredible heights on offense. But his offense kind of stalled out in 2018 after he lost most of his weapons and then went on and moved on to Ohio State to get a considerable pay raise, but take a step down in his title to be quarterback coach and the passing game coordinator there this past year. He got to have Justin Fields underneath him and completely over the course of a year reshaped him to be what we saw out of Justin Fields this year, which was 40 passing touchdowns and one interception before that semifinal game. However, during this time, it was, I think, the first time in quite a few years he was not really in the game planning, game management, and play calling of Ohio State's offense. That's kind of who he is. Darius, what are your immediate thoughts on the hire? Are you surprised? Do you like it? What's going through your mind when you hear Mike Yurcich, Texas offensive coordinator?
I'm not necessarily surprised. He's a name that we had heard or we've been hearing for the last few weeks. Personally, I'm really excited about the hire. I'm definitely more excited about the hire, this hire on the offensive side of the ball than I was on the defensive side of the ball with Chris Hash. He's a guy that I think he's a better fit for what Texas has on their current roster. I think he's a better fit with Tom Herman. And, you know, his track record in college football over the past 7 years, I mean, he's developed some guys. He's developed some quarterbacks. He's got some guys put up some numbers in his offense, both wide receivers and running backs. I'm excited about it. I feel like it was an opportunity for him. When he left Oklahoma State, he went to Ohio State. He's originally from Ohio. I think it, part of that was opportunity to, you know, go back home, get a little bit closer to home, back around family. But like you mentioned, even though he doubled his salary, he made more money, he took a little bit of a demotion on the responsibility side. I think he was kind of itching, you know, to get back in the swing of things as far as having more control over the offense and calling plays and things like that. And I think that's what opened the door for Texas to go in and get him.
Yeah, exactly. Tom Herman kind of offered him a way back into the Big 12, back into the, you know, the offensive coordinator chair, and he took it immediately. That was what he wanted to do, get back into control of that offense and get back into control of getting to potentially the next level and going from Texas offensive coordinator to maybe the head coach of a, you know, G5 team or something along those lines. That's mm-hmm. what he wants with his career path, because he is still honestly very young for a coach. I believe he's in his young 40s at this point. So, Darius, what do you think about the hire in general? Because a lot of fans going into this coordinator search were hoping that Tom Herman was going to avoid that comfort hire that was very much advised against. We advised against it. Most people are advising against it. Yurcich coming from the Ohio State pipeline that Tom Herman gets all of his coaches, basically. Is that a comfort hire for Tom Herman? Or is it, in your opinion, is it an actually good hire?
It's not a comfort hire at all, in my opinion, because Tom Herman and Yurcich have never coached together.
Well, Beck and Herman had never coached together, but I get your point.
Yurcich comes in with a much better reputation than Tim Beck does coming in. And very it's true. Not a situation. It's a situation where I think it's going to be different in the sense that whereas Herman was involved with Beck, with this coming up on year, what are we coming up on now with him? Year three? Okay. So like he's seen the wear and the, you know, the weight of having that burden of having to worry about the offense and game plan and things like that. He's missing out on overseeing other parts of his program. And I think it's going to be different in the sense that, you know, this is a guy with a proven track record. We'll get into what he did at Oklahoma State in a little bit. He's a guy that's been a part of some dynamic stuff. And I think he's going to turn it over to him and give him an opportunity to really put his stamp on this thing. And I couldn't be more excited about it just from a – I just think it's a much better fit than the air raid that they were – heading towards with Graham Harrell and what Graham Harrell likes to do. I think it's close. It's about as close to a home run hire as I feel like Texas could have got in this cycle with that. I really do.
The really nice thing about what Yurcich brings to Texas is the fact that he's not hated by the fan base that he's leaving, which is something that is pretty new. Even back to Herb Hand, who's turned out to be a decent hire, was not very, you know, there was a lot of partying as he left Auburn because it was coming off of a 9-sack game against UCF.
Yeah.
But this is the first hire where it's like there's not a party going on in Ohio State like there was for when Tim Beck left. There's nobody warning Texas about the hire.
It's the opposite. You actually see some spin coming out of Ohio State, you know, message boards and reporters saying, there were rumors that he was asked to look around by the head coach and stuff like that. That doesn't make any sense. Like if he was, they were saying what he was difficult to work with, things like that. If that's all true, why would he allow him to stick around and still be a part of everything the last few days and be a part of this playoff and everything? It doesn't make any sense. What you're seeing is, I think you're seeing folks, you know, realize that, they lost this. That was an asset that they're losing. And, you know, to put salt in the wound is either losing them to Tom Herman, who is public enemy number one in Ohio right now. So, you know, yeah, you see a lot of spin coming out of there, a lot of negative comments. Oh, well, he wasn't even a play caller. Yeah, they're upset. So, yeah, I think that's a good sign. That's a good sign because, it's a loss, and that's a program that's you know, they've been rolling for over a decade now. So for Texas to add a guy that, you know, was clearly a valued piece there, that's nothing but a positive for the Texas program.
Yeah, in my opinion, I'm not overwhelmed or underwhelmed by the hire. I'm kind of whelmed by the hire. It's a better offensive coordinator than Tim Beck, but it's not like they're getting a super heralded name, which is what you would expect given the fact that Tom Herman was given a blank check for this coordinator search. Graham Harrell was a flashy name, even though he might not have fit well, but it's a whelming hire. It might be a good hire, but it's nothing that's going to wow Texas fans, which doesn't need to. It doesn't need to. But what is his offense bringing to Texas? What is the difference?
Can I take an opportunity to try to wow Texas fans and get them excited about the hire? All right, so I'm gonna focus on Yurcich and his experience was another part of why I'm excited about it. He's got experience in the Big 12. So he spent 6 years at Oklahoma State. So I'm gonna go in order here. The first year averaged 39 points. Okay, second year 27.5. Third year 39.5. Fourth year 38.5. Year five. 45 points per game. And then year six, the final year, even though they went 7-6 and ended up leaving, they still were averaging 38 points a game. So it wasn't the offense's fault. But those first two years where he averaged 39, 27.5, 39.5, they were using two quarterbacks. I don't know if folks remember J.W. Walsh from Denguyer. He wasn't the best thrower of the ball. They were alternating quarterbacks with him and a guy named Clint Chelf and still averaging almost 40 points a game. I think that's pretty incredible. So when you finally get to the year four and year five where you had just one quarterback, that was Mason Rudolph, they averaged 38.5 points, and then Rudolph's senior year averaged 45 points, and they won 10 games. They won 10 games four times in this, out of his six seasons and averaged 9 wins per year. So over the 6 years he was there at Oklahoma State, the Cowboys averaged 38 points per game. and let me see, three of those years, they had a receiver with over 1,400 yards. Two of those years, they had two receivers with over 1,000 yards. And four of those years, they had a 1,000-yard rusher. So there are guys putting up numbers in their offense. They're doing it different ways. That's a home run hire. 39 points per game in the Big 12 and 9 wins per year with Oklahoma State talent. Just my opinion. But, okay, I'm sorry.
No, that makes sense. Well, then the question is, what exactly does he do with his offenses? What is he bringing to Texas that's going to change Texas? And honestly, I don't think there's going to be much drastic change in this offense. It's not like they're changing systems. This is not the veer and shoot. This is not the air raid. This is what Texas has been doing basically for the past few years, which is the pro spread, because he is a pro spread offensive coordinator. He's that smash mouth spread where he uses the run game to set up the passing game to score. That's his MO.
I look at it and I feel like he's a guy just going by looking at the numbers. He's a guy that they can, he's going to use what they have. Like in 2016, had three receivers at 1,400 yards, over 800 yards, over 600 yards. That's incredible. The following year, 1,400 yard rusher, 1,500 yard receiver, 1,100 yard receiver, 600 yards, and 580 yard receivers. There's balance with that. And what you're really doing is you're keeping the defense on their heels. You're taking what's being given to you. And he's manufacturing explosive plays. And that's something that Texas fans have been dying for, you know, for seemingly forever now. Ever since, you know, the last time they made the national championship and with Colt McCoy in 2009, Texas hasn't been putting up points. Yeah, this is a guy, again, with experience, recent experience in the conference. I'm excited to see what he can do with Sam Ellinger and some of the talent that Texas is bringing back next season.
Right, and talking about that passing game, I do believe there will be a change in the passing game from a Tom Herman ball control, two first downs and a punt sort of passing attack, to something that's more of a vertical spread attack, where there's concepts like sticks, like Y crosses, like levels, dig post routes, which should rely a lot on the outside wide receivers, even though the outside wide receiver's job is in route tree is going to be simplified quite a bit. Brendan Eagles is going to be used like James Washington, while the inside guy is going to be used like Jalen McCleskey, where it's more of a vertical position, so more using Jake Smith's speed to get downfield with that wide cross, get across the field and get behind those linebackers and get behind these safeties. That's sort of what this passing attack becomes. Less so ball control oriented, where you're just using slants and screens to, or bubble screens to get going downfield, and more so actually throwing the ball downfield. But also, that screen game has been really, really good under Yurcich. The running game these days is sort of going to the outside, using your wide receivers as running backs by using the screen. Started all the way back in the Greg Davis days, and now it's evolved a lot more to be more than just bubble screens, but that's where the screen game is going, is replacing the running back game bit by bit. So the screen game is going to be hopefully improved there, but you're definitely throwing the ball downfield more so than you did under Tim Beck, and it should be smarter.
You're also going to see, you mentioned the screen game. That's not just wide receiver screens. They throw the ball. He throws the ball to the running back. So we're going to get a chance, it seemed like Texas only really threw Keyonte Ingram the ball on those swing passes where he was getting left out to dry. You'll get to see next season, you'll get to see Keyonte Ingram run some option routes. You get to see guys like Bijan Robinson split out in motion to go to an empty set and actually be a viable option in the passing game. I can't wait to see Jake Smith. He got used this season. I thought correctly. Texas was using him down the seams, using his speed. I'm excited to see Jake Smith and a guy like Brendan Eagles has a chance to take off next year. Those last 3 years that Yurcich was there at Oklahoma State, he had a receiver every year with over 1,400 yards receiving. So, hey, you know what? Quinn Johnston sure would look nice in this offense, man. It's a shame that he changed his mind. But, I'm looking for somebody's got to break out of that wide receiver position next year. I'm interested to see who it is. But, no, he's
early contender for me, Marcus Washington.
Marcus Washington. Give me Josh Moore. He'll be back, and I'm excited to see him. He's an athletic guy. He's an explosive guy.
We'll see.
He uses what he has. He uses his weapons. He's a creative mind, and I'm pumped up about this hire, man. I think Texas fans should be too.
Right. And the main thing, really going back to why I don't think it's much of a drastic change, more so than the pro spread basically being his offense, it is the emphasis on that inside zone, which is very much Tom Herman's thing, and probably a big reason why Tom Herman likes this hire. And it will be interesting to see how Texas builds off their inside zone schemes, since they will now potentially have three guys in the offensive room who focus on that with Tom Herman, Mike Yurcich, and Herb Hand. All three of those guys very well versed in the inside zone. All three of them, well, Tom Herman brought himself in, but two of those guys brought in to really help out with that inside zone.
It starts up front, though, so I'm trying to remember. Texas is going to have to replace Parker Braun. They're going to have to replace Zach Shackelford. Junior Ungalau will be returning, but it's going to be some new guys in those positions next year. And I can't help but have visions of LSU in my head right now against that new offensive line with some different, not necessarily different concepts, but it being coached differently. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. That's not a good thought, but it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But Texas is going to be a zone running team. Most teams are zone run teams. Texas is going to keep it going with the inside zone and the tempo. It'll be interesting to see how effective it is. Again, he was extremely, extremely effective at Oklahoma State and clearly this past season at Ohio State with J.K. Dobbins. But again, there are some horses up front with that Ohio State line. But you can't necessarily say that about Oklahoma State, So, maybe he can make it happen. Or maybe he can make it happen. But right. I'm interested to see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. And on top of, like I said, the things they build off of that, the RPOs, the zone reads are going to be the things that are interesting. And I hope there's a lot more motion in this offense than there was last year to really keep defenses on their toes. That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping he brings. That's what I'm thinking he'll bring, especially with Herb Hand in there, if he stays. And speaking of that, Darius, the next thing that happens in this coaching search is figuring out who stays on defense and who stays on offense when it comes to your assistant coaches. And we'll look at the offensive coaches right now. We'll say the defensive coaches for another day. But who are your dream hires for this offensive staff? And we'll start off with the offensive line here because, honestly, I really hope they keep Herb Hand. He's done a pretty good job over the past 2 years. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine with Herb Hand returning as the offensive line coach. I thought the Texas offensive line, I thought they made strides in his first season. I thought they started this season off, you know, excellent. They were kicking some butt the first month of the season and looked like they hit a wall. But I would love to see Herb Hand back at the offensive line position. And in my opinion, I don't think that needs to be messed with.
Agree. Same thing. He's done very well with that offensive line. So that one's easy. Quarterback position's easy. The running back position is something that will be difficult because I don't think you want to piss off Bijan Robinson as soon as he gets here.
No, so, that's not difficult. It's not difficult at all. No. Stan Drayton turned Roschon Johnson, a guy that had never played or hadn't played quarterback since Pee Wee, into a 400, 500 yard rusher. And I thought Stan Drayton was one of the guys that did his job, earned his money this past season.
Still, it's an interesting question because his recruiting, besides this past season, been a little up and down. That's the main job of your running back coach.
Keontae Ingram was the best back in Texas.
That's true. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, but I do think you keep Stan Drayton. I think
Stan Drayton's got he's got NFL ties. He coached with the Chicago Bears. He coached Ezekiel Elliott. No, you know, don't mess with the running back spot. In my opinion, that's an easy one.
I'm gonna stop playing devil's advocate there and just agree with you. So the big questions then are your wide receiver and your tight ends coach, and wide receiver being especially interesting because you need a guy who is a player's coach in that position. You need a guy who will be able to deal with the drama, with the – what's the word I'm looking for here?
The divas,
yeah. Who do you think would be the best hire here? Because the name I've been hearing thrown around is Tyron Carrington, which would honestly be a bit of a comfort hire because he's from Houston, but he is the assistant head coach there. He's done a wonderful job with their wide receivers. Who do you think would be another good guy?
My – perfect hire. Obviously, receivers, I mean, yeah, you need guys, a guy that understands position, guys that work drills, guys that they can talk to on the sideline about what's going on. But I think most of all, you need a recruiter, okay? Texas needs somebody that's going to add a punch on the recruiting trail. I think a perfect guy right now for the role, he's already in the conference, he's already got ties to the area. I think Kansas wide receiver coach Emmett Jones would be a home run hire as far as locking down the top wide receiver talent in the state. I think that would be a
Emmett Jones be a, from Kansas.
Yes, sir.
That would piss off a lot of Texas fans just hearing the word Kansas coach.
He coached at South Oak Cliff. He coached at Texas Tech prior to going over there to Kansas. He's got a lot of ties to the state, knows a lot of folks in the area. I think you would see Texas will start. You know, that Texas has been missing out on the Garrett Wilsons. You know, Rondell Moore, stuff like that, CeeDee Lambs, Emmett Jones will put an end to that. I can tell you, I can promise you that. So I think that would be one to keep an eye on. But Tyron Carrier is another good name, too. But I think Jones provides more, a little bit more pop on the recruiting trail on that front.
Interesting. And then another guy you really need, more so as a recruiter, especially this position, the tight end position, but given the importance of the tight end position under Tom Herman, who do you think Texas should go after?
Tight end. So my pipe dream, it'll never happen, okay? The perfect tight end hire would be Iowa, currently Iowa offensive coordinator / tight ends coach / son of the head coach. That's Brian Ferentz. Okay, it'll never happen. Texas could, you know, quadruple his salary.
They ain't pulling Ferentz away from Ferentz.
No, and then you would have to give him the coordinator title, you know, and you just hire Yursich, you know, it'll never happen. So my dream hire, that's a little bit more realistic, even though I don't know how realistic it is because he's been where he's been for 7-8 years now. But the name that I look at, a guy that's produced tight ends in the past recently, you know, they seem to put one out every year. And they contribute both in the passing game and in the running game, which is really important. I look at a guy like Pete Alomar at Stanford. And, you know, I don't know his background. I don't know his ties. But, you know, there's been some, you know, some rumblings out there about, you know, David Shaw's, his footing there and his future at Stanford. And, you know, if something were to, you know, maybe there'd be some nervous moments, you know, during this season. Maybe Texas could go in and get an interview with a guy like Alomar. You know, he clearly, you know, his track record speaks for itself. Kobe Fleener, currently, you know, just recently, Caden Smith. Stanford puts out tight ends like nobody's business. So Zach Ertz, you know, they do it. So he will be my dream tight end hire to go after.
That was a good one. You know what would be really funny, a huge failure, but really still funny, is if Wareheim survives.
So he snuck through. How did
he snuck through?
Can't get rid
how did
of
he
him.
How did they miss him?
Can't
how did he get
rid
through
of
that? Yeah, I don't think it's happening, but whew, boy,
no disrespect to Wareheim, but I mean, I feel like they could find something for him. You know, clearly, you know, everyone likes him. You know, he's a part of the family and what's going on, but no, to get a guy like Alomar in here, a brand name like that that's put, you know, seemingly puts a tight end in the league every year from Stanford. Oh, the Cowboys got one too. What's his name? I can't remember his name. But, yeah, Stanford gets tight end drafted every year.
Yeah, very true. So let's go ahead and get on to what's going on tomorrow. So we had the news that happened yesterday. Let's get to the news that's happening tomorrow. As Texas plays Utah in the Alamo Bowl. Now, Utah right now is heavily favored by a touchdown, which is pretty similar to what happened last year, was Texas was, again, the underdog to Georgia by a touchdown in that game. Let's go ahead and get our predictions out here to start with. Darius, what do you think? How do you think Texas comes out in this game? Because personally, I think Tom Herman does very well in bowl games. He does very well getting his team up for bowl games. Yeah, however, this Utah team, they're not going to be blown away. I don't think they're coming out flat against Texas, like what happened with Georgia. And you know, I don't think they're going to underestimate Texas like Florida State underestimated Houston. I think this is going to be a game that is a lot harder to win for Texas than it was against Georgia, because they are not going to be underestimated, even though they are 7-5. And on top of that, they don't have their offensive coordinator for the entire year. They don't have their defensive coordinator for the entire year. There have been a lot of extraneous news going on around the team, so there's a lot of distractions happening around Texas. What do you think happens in this Texas-Utah game? How do you think this ends up? And then we'll get into talking about what Utah brings.
We talked about it last week. Utah's got a ton of, or the week before that, Utah's got a ton of Texas kids on their roster. I think they've got 15 or 16 of them, man. You know, at least a dozen of them play. You know, they play important roles, offense, defense, and special teams. They play important roles in what they're doing. So, you know, they're going to be coming into town fired up. Utah, they've been a solid program over the past, you know, decade and a half, two decades or so, even going back to where that's really where Urban Meyer took off, right?
Yep.
So, you know, they've got the respect of folks around the country. You saw they were able to pull two commitments away from Texas this year on the recruiting trail. Utah views Texas as an important recruiting ground for them. They view it as a place that that kids will leave, they can get kids from. And this is an opportunity for them to showcase their brand and their style of football in the state of Texas. And I think they're going to view it as an opportunity. And, you know, Kyle Whittingham's been there for 15 years. Morgan Scaly's been there for 12 years. I didn't realize those guys had been there that long before I, you know, looked them up, did some research on them for the KYO this week. And, you know, that's a staff that's, you know, it's a lot of continuity there. It's the polar opposite of, like you mentioned, what we've been seeing, what's going on in Texas right now. With that, you know, Utah's got a lot of seniors. They're a senior-laden team. They're a team laden with Texas kids. It's a veteran staff. You know, all the signs report point towards, you know, Texas being in some trouble. But I think for that reason, too, it's all the more reason. You know, in this bowl season, you never know. Texas might come out. I think it might end up being a ball game. But I think in the end, I think Utah's favorite for a reason. I think Utah's going to win in a close game.
Right.
But I would love to be
proven wrong. Both these teams, both these staffs, well, Texas, mainly when I'm talking to the staff, is Tom Herman. Both these teams thrive as the underdog role. And even though Utah is favored, they are seen as potentially coming into this game apathetic or whatever the excuse is, thriving under this, hey, they're not Texas, they're Utah sort of role. Both these teams thrive in those conditions. So it'll be an interesting game to watch which team is going to really come out of this, start fast, and then finish it. And let's go ahead and break down Utah right now. And we'll start off with who the Utes are, because most fans really have been watching Utah, has seen two games primarily, Oregon and USC, which, again, has been the big critique of Utah is they haven't beat any team that has over 7 wins. And Texas has 7 wins. But both times they faced Oregon and USC, they had trouble. Here's the thing is I think Oregon is a very solid team, just a very good team that beat them twice. And USC beat them by exploiting their propensity towards one-on-one coverage by using the air raid, which is what it's meant to do. That's what the air raid does. So I'm not particularly sold on the fact that, hey, Utah can't beat a good team. I think
no, not at all.
I think Utah has just run into trouble against some good teams and some concepts that are meant to beat them.
Well, yeah, they face some teams that, you know, they're not strangers to them. You know, they know Utah very well, and what, you know, they're a better matchup for Utah than maybe Texas would be for them. No, like we mentioned, Utah's a veteran team, man. You said they haven't beaten anybody with over 7 wins. I mean, well, they can't control, you know, what the other team's doing or scheduling other games, you know. But, you know, USC is a talented team. We saw Texas beat that same USC team a season ago. Not that that means anything, but and Oregon's a talented team. So when Utah faces teams, apparently, or it looks like you could argue when they face teams that have superior talent, even though I'm not sure that's the case in this matchup with Texas, they can struggle to try to play the type of game that they want to play because they're a ball control offense. But it's gonna be interesting. Whoever can Tom Herman's favorite, or whoever can impose their will tomorrow will that'll be the team that has the upper hand in this matchup.
For sure, for sure. Let's go ahead and take a look at their defense first, because Texas is looking at Morgan Scaly as their defensive coordinator, and for good reason. Their defense is ranked 7th in the country, at least top 10, in most every statistical ranking of defenses that is out there. They're very good. Their defensive line right now is led by a guy named Bradley Anae, who has 12.5 sacks. He's a super high motor. The rest of their guys, you know, have the ceiling of Texas's best guys, like Keon J. Coburn, like Mora Ojemo. Their defensive line right now is pretty, pretty solid, but they're not the most agile dudes on the field.
Well, so Utah plays a 4-2-5 scheme. I would, for Texas fans, I would tell them to picture in your head kind of similar to what what TCU wants to do. Mm-hmm. The difference is Utah's got two guys that were on their front four on their defensive line that were first team AP All-Americans. You mentioned Bradley Anae. The defensive tackle number 99, Lakai Fotu. Fotu is 6'6", 350 pounds. Zach Shackelford, Parker Braun, Junior Ungalau, they're gonna have to bring their big boy pants in this matchup. In the trenches. And we've seen Texas this season. Part of something that worries me, you know, we've seen Texas lose the battle in the trenches up front this season. And in each of those games, they didn't come out victorious. The hope for me is that, you know, maybe the offensive line, you know, all they needed was, you know, some time off. They didn't have any bye weeks, you know, that's not true. They did have a bye week during the season. But the hope is that some extra time off lets them heal up and get rested, but they're going to need their big boy pants going against this defensive line. Utah's also got two linebackers, Francis Bernard and Devin Lloyd. They're not small guys. We're used to seeing smaller linebackers in the Big 12, you know, guys 205, 210 pounds. No, these guys are about 230 and they can run. They also can drop back and cover. So I was impressed with this duo. Where I think Texas can have some success against Utah is through the air. You know, if they are able to protect, you mentioned it, or I'm not sure if we did mention it yet. Utah is going to be without their starting corner, their top cornerback. Mr. Johnson's declaring for the draft.
So he's preparing for the draft.
Jalen Johnson. Yeah, and then the safety. His name is escaping me right now.
Julian Blackman.
Blackman's going to miss the game as well. Blackman's
as well,
all Pac-12
guy. Well,
there's
other safety as well.
Yeah, it don't even. Nevertheless, man, they missing some folks in that secondary, and Texas is getting guys back. You know, most importantly, I know a guy that they've missed dearly the last month or so. That's Colin Johnson. So with Colin's size out there, that should open up some things for Devin Duvernay, who's had a phenomenal season this year. And then, yeah, you still got the weapons like Brandon Eagles and Jake Smith. If Texas can protect up front and Sam Ehlinger can have time to set his feet, the Longhorns can have success through the air against this Utah team. They can have explosive plays. They can flip this thing around because Utah's used to being in front. If Texas can get a lead, you know, that would bode well for the Longhorns. But through the air is the way they're going to have to attack. But right. Utah's got some athletes, man. They've got some athletes out there.
Yeah, the passing attack is going to be very crucial in this game plan, because I think what they're going to have to do is really play fast against this defense, keep them on their heels, and spread the ball out. That's kind of the three things they need to do. And this means misdirections with the RPO and play actions, taking shots when they're in cover one, and generally not being predictable. We're using motions and zone reads. Getting these guys on their heels, playing fast so that they don't know what's going on, and then taking shots where they're giving them to you. Because they play a lot of man under, they're going to be taking guys like Devin Duvernay out of the play. So playing under, taking the underneath routes, attacking underneath there is going to be pretty important. But once they start to pressure up on that, because they will, they'll go to cover one, then taking a shot down the field with Colin Johnson. That's kind of what you need to do is keep them off balance, keep them guessing what you're going to do. Even though their cornerbacks are pretty good, they're really heavily used in run support. That's one of the Utah's main things is using cornerbacks in run support, kind of like TCU, like you're talking about, using those defensive backs as main major run supporters.
Hey, in Texas, they've shown they like doing that zone, leaving that cornerback out there for that running back. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was Kansas State. I think the cornerback had like 8 tackles in the first half, and by the third quarter, he was coming out of the game holding his shoulder. So, Texas doesn't mind attacking those cornerbacks in the run game. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. That's a good point.
Making sure that, again, those three things are crucial. That's what Oregon did. That's what USC did is, one, they won the one-on-one matchups, but two, they weren't predictable. They weren't using the classic Tom Herman enforce your will, and we're going to run this play. You might know we're running this play, but we're still going to run it and run it down your throats. That's not working against Utah. Misdirection and keeping their heads swimming is what will beat Utah. That is going to be this defense and this offense. It's going to be a lot of, is Sam Ehlinger running on this play? Is he handing it off, or is he passing it across the middle? That's going to be huge, because Sam Ehlinger, again, is your X factor. If they can get him, if they can get this defense focused on him, it's going to open the game up for everybody else.
Just give him time to throw.
Yeah, that's true. Give him time to throw. As long as Utah doesn't get Bradley and I into the backfield too much, then Texas should be fine here.
And Anai is nice. He'll be number 6, wearing number 6 for Utah tomorrow. He's pretty explosive out of that stance. I like him. So Sam Cosby's got a chance to get some more draft stock up for himself. Yeah. He's got a decision to make.
Do we want Sam Cosby to do well in this game, or do we not want him to do as well in this game?
I want him to do well, man. He's got to do what's best for him, but I definitely want him to do well.
No, I'm just playing.
Is there any other? Is there anybody else to keep an eye on, an underclassman for Texas? No,
Ehlinger's
not going anywhere, right?
Yeah, Ehlinger put his name in for the draft. As a draft analyst, kind of get an idea of where he would go in the draft.
He would be like a fourth round.
Yeah, I don't think Ehlinger should leave. One, I think that'd be a bad idea, and two, I don't think he's going to. So. Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of where we stand. Keep an eye on Sam Cosby and his future at Texas. If he leaves, that's kind of a shot for Texas next year. But if he stays, that's a huge boost for the Longhorns.
With Texas already losing what they lose in the interior, that would hurt to lose Cosby, man.
That's true. Hurt. That's so true. So let's go ahead and take a look at this offense for the Utah Utes. And you have to start off with their main playmaker. Zach Moss, who this year had 15 touchdowns off of 219 carries for 1,359 yards, and on top of that, 374 yards on receiving.
Man, Zach Moss is a bad dude. Texas, that's all y'all need to know. Zach Moss is a bad dude. I like Chuba Hubbard, but Zach Moss is a little bit more versatile than Hubbard is. I think Zach Moss is every bit as explosive as Hubbard is. Zach Moss can go. Texas is going to have to get that guy to the ground. I think he's Utah's – he's their best player on offense.
And that's the problem with Zach Moss, is getting him to the ground, because he is incredibly difficult to take down. I've seen multiple attempts at taking him down to the ground. And the way he slips tackles is impressive, because he has such a low center of balance and such strong legs that you know, he can be twisted and pulled down in so many different ways – but he's just able to stay on his feet and find ways to stay in bounds, go forward, fall forward at the very least. So getting him down to the ground is going to be a big problem for Texas. And if Texas is up to, you know, doing Texas things and missing tackles, it's going to be a long game for the Longhorns.
But yeah, he's not a little guy.
No, he's not. But he kind of looks like it on TV. Like, I saw him and I was like, oh, that guy kind of looks like a, you know, a little water bug, because he is 5'10", but he's also 222 pounds. So, again,
he's probably going to go like in the second or third, probably their second round of the draft this spring. So, no, he can play.
On top of that, a huge threat in that screen game. Again, 375 yards receiving is nothing to, you know, thumb your nose at. That dude is going to be a huge threat in the screen game, especially with those big ugly guys in the front line and the offensive line, who have been, you know, very solid when it comes to run blocking and pass blocking.
I think Texas's D-line, I think they can have some success against the Utah front. I do. I was surprised, you know, Utah wasn't, you know, they're the youth on their team really is in their offensive line. And, you know, they had ups and downs throughout the year, but I think Texas, you know, I think Texas might, they might surprise some folks with how they control the line of scrimmage defensively against Utah. And that will go a long ways towards slowing Moss down for sure.
Yeah. But, and Texas can, and Texas has shown a propensity towards doing well against running back running.
Yeah.
That's where they've done well. I mean, you look at Chuba Hubbard and how he did against Texas, almost having 30 carries, but his lowest output of the season. And on that note, how the hell did Gundy screw that up against A&M? Come on, man. Come on. God, that was awful.
He didn't have Yursich there to tell him what to do. You know? That's what it was. That's all they were missing.
Yeah, but again, Texas does well against the running back. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But I think the biggest concern for Texas, I think we're the biggest, you know, something I talked about earlier this season is Texas having trouble against a mobile quarterback, and that's what you have in Tyler Huntley. Now, Tyler Huntley isn't anything, you know, he's a good quarterback. He's not like an insanely talented quarterback, but he's a good quarterback. He's very accurate, super accurate, like above 70% accurate, although he's had a lot of time in the pocket, and he's not been asked to really throw the ball very far downfield, although when he does, he does well.
A lot of play action stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but he's very explosive with his feet. He can move around the pocket, and he can get downfield. And that's where Texas has trouble, is mobile quarterbacks. Not just this year, but years past.
Yes, the mobile quarterback is a big, big, big concern. But also with this Utah team, I mean, I just, you know, my question, who do you focus on? Okay, so Brent Queith, I hope I'm saying that right, the tight end slash H-back, you know, he's a unique guy. He's about 6'2", about 230 pounds. He's a unique guy. But he's their leading receiver with 31 catches, and the tight end is averaging 18.5 yards per catch. And he's a Texas native, so yeah, he's a guy that, you know, was overlooked by some of the Texas schools, ended up at Utah. Part of what, looking up the info on him, that he's their leading receiver with 31 catches, but they've got 8 other guys with at least 13 receptions or more. That means out of every option that's on the field, everybody's a viable option to get the football. There's nobody out there that's just taking up space or running a dummy route or decoy route. everybody's got to do their job. Everybody has to stay focused in their zone. There can't be any peeking back at the quarterback. It puts a lot of stress on the defense, and that does concern me about this matchup.
Right, but I think the thing about their wide receivers is there's nobody out there for their wide receivers that is a huge threat for Texas.
I disagree.
Besides Queeth, I don't think there's anybody who can really expose where Texas is young and has had a lot of trouble this year in the cornerback position.
So with that, keep an eye on number 19. His name is Brian Thompson. He's not among the top four leaders in receptions, but he's got 17 catches this year. He's averaging over 26 yards a catch and a touchdown every five touches. So he's the deep threat. Number 19 is they got to watch out for going deep.
Yeah, no, I get that, but still, there's nobody there who's been consistently the dude, and that's what I would be concerned with this young secondary. Outside of Brandon Jones, who will probably be tasked with being around the neck of Brant Queeth basically all game long, especially on third downs, there's nobody on this field who I'm like, yeah, no, the Longhorns simply can't deal with that. Like CeeDee Lamb. There's no CeeDee Lamb on this team. There's no real Tylan Wallace on this team. There's nobody on this team that I'm like, oh, that's a guy you really need to keep out for. There's no Jalen Reagor on this team. That's where I think Texas is going to have to really step up their game. You know, hey, where Texas has the advantage here, where they can say, hey, we can deal with these wide receivers, like what they did against Kansas State. Well, not as bad as Kansas State, but still, we can deal with these wide receivers. Let's focus on making sure that Tyler Huntley's head is swimming and that Zach Moss is not breaking out. Those are the two things that they need to focus on. Make sure, hey, get to Huntley and make sure that Moss, get to Huntley, but make sure he doesn't break the pocket and make sure Moss is not breaking through.
You're saying make the receivers beat you. Make them beat you through the air, huh?
Exactly. Make them beat you through the air. Say, hey, Huntley, try to fit it into some tight windows to some of your wide receivers. You can't find Brant Queeth as often, and then Zach Moss is having trouble getting through that defensive line. If you can do that, then you're going to neutralize basically everything Utah can do.
Yeah, this is Texas and tight window don't really go together this year. You know, that's the only concern.
That's true.
It's a well of a matchup. I'm really intrigued to see how they come out and see if they answer the bell, because I don't really know a lot of folks. I don't know many folks that are really that think they really have a chance in this game.
No, but that was the same way I felt against Georgia. That's how most Texas fans felt against Georgia.
But you knew they were going to be ready to. I mean, it's different. Utah.
This game is important.
It's going to be important to Utah.
It's very different. That was a. You know, that Texas team had a lot more swagger. It had a lot more confidence in themselves. This year has just been an emotional roller coaster for these kids. So, you know, we'll see if they can buck up. But you're right. It is a different year than what happened last year against Georgia.
Yeah, it's going to be a big boy football game. And the opportunity, it's an opportunity. It's a chance there that they can get embarrassed if they're not ready to play.
Yeah, but, that's very true.
It's also one of those games too where they're not going to get a ton of credit for winning it either. And so it kind of sucks, but
I am not expecting to happen to Texas what happened to Oklahoma. And boy, that was beautiful.
I don't feel bad for Oklahoma. And hey, maybe that helps with Alfred Collins, you know? Maybe he might be like, "Man, I knew this wasn't real." But no, that was I was a little embarrassed for them, man. I actually was. I really was.
I was not.
Just a little bit.
Not embarrassed for them at all.
Because you know the idiot A&M fans. Oh, SEC, Big 12 sucks. You know, all that crap. They had on their SEC pom-poms, talking about how bad the Big 12 is, blah, blah, blah.
That's the funny thing is after that LSU win, I didn't hear one SEC chant.
No, I saw it on. So my Twitter is freaking full of it. Oh, Big 12 should have to go to undefeated from now on. blah, blah, blah. Big 12 went, what, 4-1 against the SEC in bowl games last year? But it didn't count last year, I guess.
This year is the one that counts.
So it matters, yeah. So Big 12 sucks. Big 12 is soft. Damn it, Oklahoma. You did it again. So maybe somebody else can represent the Big 12.
Everybody's saying they're the Buffalo Bills, the 1990 Buffalo Bills. But those 1990 Buffalo Bills made it to the Super Bowl. They won playoff games. I'd say they're more the 2000s Atlanta Braves.
Oklahoma can't even get in the club. They're stuck outside. They're stuck outside every year.
Texas is nowhere near the club.
Texas is at a house party with a lot of other folks. They're having a good time. You know, they're not trying to be big timers yet.
That's a take.
So yeah, Clemson. Alabama.
We're LSU, too cool they're in the for VIP.
They're in the VIP. You know, Oklahoma's outside the club, getting rejected. Who else knocking on the door? I guess Ohio State's in the club. You know, they keep going back and forth from VIP to, you know, they don't know what they want to do. But yeah, everybody else, yeah, they're at a house party. They didn't even get dressed to try to go out. It's just, you know, whatever. We're good.
They're playing beer pong in the backyard.
Yeah, they're taking it easy, man. You know, letting the cool kids do the cool kids stuff. Same folks every year. You know.
Yeah. So, I think that's gonna do it for us, y'all. That's been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Lil Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. My man, DT, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter, DTERRELL05. The Mavericks just lost. They got whooped. I don't want to talk about it. Cowboys won and screwed themselves out of, you know, probably 3 or 4 spots in the draft. You know, stupid stuff. Other than that, though, everything's good. You know, you want to talk about something else? I'm all for it. Let's talk. Let's talk about Texas and about how Ohio State didn't really want the coordinator. Let's talk about that. You know, other stuff. You know, but yeah, hit me up. Hit me up. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, are you basically saying, "Come at me, Bucknuts. Come at me."
Yeah, there's something wrong with that. I can't believe some of that stuff I was reading. What?
Ohio State is an interesting fan base. That's one thing that's certain.
I heard they could be a little obnoxious during the little series a few years ago, Vince Young and co. Yeah, man.
Obnoxious is one way to put it. But on that note, you guys can find us on the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. That's Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes. Anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. Thank y'all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Peace.